My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, to pluck the low-hanging fruit of the literati, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
And here we are back on a Sunday afternoon.
It's awesome. I missed you last week, Judy.
I know. I was sick. I still have a little bit of a cold.
You were recovering from the Morrissey concert, I understand.
I was in bed for 2 days afterwards.
The Meat is Murder slideshow was just too much for you to handle.
There were kids in front of us, a straight couple in front of us during Meat is Murder making out, which just seems like the worst thing ever. Like,
why? Because Schindler List wasn't showing.
Oh, and I saw one of our Roberta's friends here.
Oh, right. Our friend Christian, the manager, who kind of looks like Morrissey, actually.
Yeah, he does. He was there clutching flowers.
He's a murderer.
Oh, that's true. He works at a media establishment. But I'm really excited because it's National Fisting Day.
There is no Woo! Such thing as National Fisting Day, Judy.
Jisley told me there is.
Jisley said so. Well, Mitt Romney says otherwise.
But I'm also happy to that we have the wonderful Bob Burt joining us.
Woo! My favorite beatnik, Bob Burt.
Yay, everybody's favorite beatnik.
Known for playing in that popular folk rock band, Sonic Youth. And banging the can and Pussy Galore, my favorite.
Banging the can.
As I always say, taught me the valuable lesson that art is like children and should be seen and not heard.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, I think I was listening to Right Now when I realized that. Well, you know, that was a day when you could make willfully, music that was willfully confrontational. And put it over as art, I guess.
True, I guess.
But Bob's got a very storied career, of course. He's going to be playing with his old friend Liddy Lunch again. His old band, the Chrome Cranks, are out on the road again.
Not really, but we did play a show last week.
You know, at your age, Bob, that counts as a tour.
Okay, true.
You probably drove to the show.
But what are you doing to celebrate National Fisting Day?
Well, actually, I experienced my first fistings this year, so...
It's a
good day.
Yeah.
I was surprised because you used to work for Andy Warhol, so I figured you'd be an old hand at this.
Yeah. Oh.
Closing.
And I didn't bring my snare drum for that rim shot.
Rim shot, Bob?
Yeah,
rim shot.
That's one. Okay, I know the music stuff is very cool too, but one thing I've always been curious about is working for Andy Warhol. What was that like? Did you have much contact with him?
No, not at all. I answered the phone a few times when he called, but I basically was working for his right-hand man named... Rupert Smith down on Canal Street, but we did all of his silkscreen printing there. We did all the editions.
Man.
And we did all his print editions, all the portraits, you know, all the screen printing was done there. And so.
What a great job, though, for a young guy.
Andy Warhol wasn't pulling his own prints, Bob?
No, he wasn't, if you can believe that.
At the factory?
Nope.
So you didn't have any tinfoil walls or socialites overdosing on speed in your office?
No, not at all. Most of the time I was working the night shift by myself.
Yeah, you weren't like hanging around like shooting speedballs with Lou?
Nope. The only thing that happened was one day I was working the night shift and my boss said, someone's going to come by and visit. I want you to show them around the place. So the doorbell rang and it was Debbie Harry and Steven Sprouse.
Oh, that's cool though, right?
That was pretty cool.
The first time, the only time I saw Andy Warhol on the street in New York was, it was 1982. I had just gotten to NYU. It was like my first semester of college. And I went to see Lou Reed at the Bottom Line. It's when he had Robert Quine and his band. It was actually a good group he had with him.
Uh-huh.
And Andy Warhol came, and he looked pretty frail. He wasn't looking great. He had this like ridiculous wig on, you know, this big silver, you know, wig. But he was with these six pretty, identical-looking, preppy blonde boys, these buff blonde boys, all wearing like matching varsity leather jackets and like, you know, perfect blue jeans and penny loafers. Mm. It was awesome. It was very, very inspirational.
I saw him a bunch of times on the street and around, and there was one time I was in a Soho art gallery, and he used to, like, whenever a new issue of Interview would come out, he would go to galleries and just stand there with a pile, and he would sign them and hand them out to people. And I was just sitting there watching him. There was this big long line of people waiting to get their magazine signed, and he just, like, walked away from the line and came over to me and said, "Here, don't you want one?"
Oh, that's nice.
And then, you know, someone pointed out, Julie Kaffertz actually pointed out many years later, like, well, yeah, he was cruising the young hot.
You were young
that and hot. Julie puts a naughty spin on everything. I don't know her, but that offends me.
Bob was young and hot.
Yeah, well, one time.
So, but, you know, working for Andy Warhol, you do seem to be at sort of some nexus of some sort of crazy New York art scene. You know, and the bands you played in, especially, you know, coming up with Sonic Youth and whatnot. And
well, yeah, I was mentioning it to before how, like, you know, we just did this Chrome Cranks show last week, and there was this article in the Village Voice online with an interview with Peter Aaron, and it was just like, you know, referring back to the glory days of 1992 in the East Village, which, you know, it kind of cracked me up, you know, growing up here and actually, you know, remembering walking down St. Mark's on my way to the Fillmore East in the 60s, you know, and experiencing, you know, how the town changed all through the years. I mean, all through the, you know, the 70s, I discovered Max's and CBGB's in like 75, and I was going there constantly and experiencing all that. When I was in high school, I saw the New York Dolls at Max's in like 1972. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just like, I don't know.
Isn't it awesome to have someone finally on the show who's older than us, Jimmy?
I know, it's great. The first New York club I went to was
I may
Max's.
Be sitting in the same seat that Handsome Dick sat in. And he might be a year or two older than me.
I think he's 59 this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not there yet. I got a few more.
It's crazy. I mean, you know, I haven't hit the half century mark either, and Judy's 20 years away from it, of course.
Oh my God, yes. I'm barely 30.
You don't
still in the bloom of my youth. I just got my period last week.
Nice.
Sorry.
Yeah, me and Bob are going through menopause over here.
I remember when I turned 50 and I was standing at Maxwell's and Todd walked by and I just said, "I just turned 50. You know what that means? I've been coming to this fucking place for more than half my life."
Going to Maxwell's more years than you weren't going to it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just saw that Madonna's Erotica album just turned 20. And to me, that's like, that's kind of a recent record for me. Yeah. You know, like, what is 20? Yeah, you know.
Well, 1992.
Yeah, the first Bikini Kill record just turned 20. I'm like, oh my God. You know?
Yeah, time flies. You know, the weird thing is, though, I mean, I think, you know, we, as a group, and I include you, old man, Bob Burt, you know, in this, I think it's our attitude and our outlook. I feel much younger in what we do. I mean, imagine where our parents were when they were in their 40s. I mean, my parents never had any fun anyway, but they were old when they were 24.
Yeah, you know.
Well, yeah, now I think probably people like young Joe look at us as caution, like weird old people.
Joe the engineer is the next wave of shit. That's right. Watch and learn, yeah. Mr. Joe the engineer.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine last night who I went to high school with, and she has two kids, and they're trying to, you know, they're right now they're going through the college selection process. And she has said to me before, she goes, "You're really lucky you don't have kids, because when you do, they're a constant reminder of how old you are."
Oh, man. I just recently, back in May, I went out to L.A., and I was at this rock show, and I was backstage, and I was talking to some young girls, and it turns out, you know,
what was that like?
I was older than their parents. You know?
Yeah, that's what
you're hearing things like, "Oh yeah, you know, my mother turned me on to the Cramps." You
know? Oh, and speaking of the Cramps,
happy birthday, poor dead Lux Interior.
Yes.
Oh man, I miss the Cramps. You know,
yeah, totally.
They were always a really good time.
I think a lot of people have the same revelation, had the same epiphany the first time I heard Human Fly. You know, I mean, it was crazy. It was like, and then the fuzz comes launching in, and it was like, holy shit, this is the coolest fucking thing I ever heard in my life. And it just really shifted my whole worldview. Can we form a band that sounds like that? What do we do? It was like, it was just a world changer.
And the funny part is, like, I wasn't that, you know, as a lot of people that we know are, that educated in where it all came from. It took me like two or three Cramps albums to realize that all these songs are covers.
Yeah, me too. I was just like, this is cool new stuff.
Yeah, but Lux and Ivy weren't exactly Lieber and Stoller, that's for sure. But you know, I feel. I think their first album was the last great record they made. The singles were great, Human Fly. But no, Songs of the Lord Taught Us, okay, was a masterpiece. But
it was.
But it's outsider art compared to Psychedelic Jungle. By the time they got to Psychedelic Jungle, it had turned all Paisley and it was chick friendly. You know, it stopped.
Chick friendly.
That's right. It was like Paisley and Love Beads, and it was.
Oh, that's what chicks are about. I'm gonna floor you. I'm gonna give you the Vulcan Death Grip or some other wrestling term.
Bring it on, McGuire, because at that point they didn't want to use your eyeballs for dials on their TV set. It became like, you know, it became like a happy trip. It was just way too friendly.
You're dead.
I tend to disagree.
It's a very soft record. They were still putting on great live shows, and I saw them.
I think it's their best album, and I thought
Songs the Lord Taught Us, it was
as great as Brian Gregory was, Kid Congo Power. Yes. Like close
and friend. Those were great live shows, but I think that record just, you know, go home and put it on your old Victrola there.
I will. It's one of the few Cramps records that I own. I don't even have.
I don't think it compares. There's nothing on Psychedelic Jungle. Even Goo Goo Muck is pretty soft compared to Sunglasses After Dark. Garbage Man is a masterpiece of sorts.
Anyway, we're gonna stop this sexist rant by Edison, and we're gonna hear some chick friendly Bob Burt music.
My last comment on Lux Interior though is I was always impressed that the older he got, the more into drag and dressing like a woman he was wearing like the G-strings and higher heels the older he got. And how old was Lux? He was always older than the rest of us, right? Kind of like an old guy in the scene, but he looked great. His hair got higher and he got more into cross-dressing the further his career went along, and I always kind of respected that.
Right.
Okay, so what are we hearing, Bob?
What are we hearing? We're hearing the chick-friendliest band of all time.
Yes.
Called Pussy Galore. Sweet little high five.
It's the Mike and Judy Show here on the Heritage Radio Network with Bob Burt. Let her rip.
One riff. One line.
When I think about it, wait.
That was great. I'm sorry, I've got a mouthful of Jesus Christ, my favorite Catholic pizza from Roberta's.
That was kind of awesome, Bob. Always one of my favorite Pussy Galore songs.
Oh, cool.
I like it when, you know, I love it when Pussy Galore, you know, leans hard on kind of the garage rock thing like that, and Dick Johnson. To me, was, you know,
which was 95% of what we did.
Yeah. Well, then there's like the tape manipulation, and there's a lot of, you know, some of it needs to be heard once exactly.
But so you guys played recently.
Fuck you, Mike Edison.
You guys played recently too, didn't you?
Yes, we did. We had a reunion last December 23rd, opening for Yellow Tango at one of their many Hanukkah gigs, and it was a blast.
Are you going to do that again?
If it was up to me, it would be, the answer would be yes, but I'm not the boss. I'm just the drummer. And,
You're the spine of the band.
You're the one member in that band that's not
replaceable. I would hate to think that I scavenged around the junkyard and built a whole new drum kit for one benefit show, but we'll see what happens.
After that show, I saw so many photos of, like, you know, the circular saws, the bands, you know, tying your snare drum in the gas tank, like posted on Facebook. Everybody sort of gravitated towards your junked up, built up drum set, which sounded great. Thank you. Possibly you weren't annoying enough that night. It wasn't the treble wasn't tweaked high enough the way I remember the old shows where it was like really like, holy shit. Standing in front of that band back in the day was really...
Well, I was shocked because like standing back in the day, you know, John was a lot more meticulous and I remember the sound checks with that metal drum kit going on for hours. And we like got the Maxwells and set up and, you know, we ran through some songs. And, oh, that's great, you know.
But John is a perfectionist. I mean, we both worked with him a lot.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's John on the Mike and Judy theme music. That's
Oh, cool.
You know, and Jet's John Spencer has been a guest here on the Mike and Judy show as well, and our good friend. But John is definitely a perfectionist. I mean, work with John, I mean, he is and that's why his records always sound so good. I think that's why the Blues Explosion sounds so good.
Exactly.
And the Pussy Galore records, and obviously, you know, I'm teasing a little bit, but when he wants to turn the screw, you know, and push you back off the speakers, he knows exactly what the fuck he's doing.
Yep, exactly.
What about what's going on with the Chrome Cranks?
Well, you know, the Chrome Cranks... we fell apart in the 90s and didn't speak to each other for 15 years. And then we got back together in, 2009. And we did two shows, one in Brooklyn, one in Manhattan. And then we did another show in France for a lot of money. And then
really like to pay. I love that.
Yeah, it was great. That was like, you know, I loved that. Just flying away for a weekend, rocking a bunch of kids, and flying back with a ton of money in your pocket.
The Rolling Stones didn't talk to each other for 15 years either, but they actually made records during that whole time.
Yeah, same with the Ramones. You know? But we all moved away and got different lives and things, and then we managed to get back. And then we got back together again in 2010, did two more shows, and then recorded this album, which finally came out this year. And then fucking it took forever just to get this one show together, dealing with everyone that lives in different states and different crises that were going on at the time. And it's turned out William Weber, our guitar player, who also played in G.G. Allin, right, along with you. Not along with you, but...
Yeah, another colleague.
Yeah, another colleague.
Ex-G.G. alumni.
And he couldn't make it, so we got Kurt Wolf from Pussy Galore to fill in, who did a great job. And finally we played this gig last Saturday, which was packed, and we rocked it, and it was great. But I totally experienced that whole nightmarish situation of the East Village, what it is nowadays. While I was loading my car at 3 in the morning, I saw some guy get beaten to a pummel by 5 Guidos. And then this other person, this couple from Virginia who are really big fans and have been like promoting the show since it was announced months ago, came up for the weekend. And then when they were at the show, supposedly someone slipped a date rape drug into the guy's drink, and he doesn't even remember seeing his favorite band that he's been waiting 5 months for. You know, it's just like a lot of weird things going around surrounding that whole situation, but it was a great show.
That used to happen to Tim Warren all the time without the date rape drugs.
Exactly.
We're both veterans of Crypt Records as well. That was always, you know, Tim would, I love you guys, I'm coming to the show, and he'd be spinning records. By the time he hit the stage, he'd be like face down and you know, sort of have to like lift the phono needle off of his head. So we got a Chrome Crank song to play. I know you think this is like the best record you guys ever made, right?
Yes, it is, because... you know, we grew up, we settled down, and we finally did it the right way. And we recorded it upstate New York in this big barn, the same place where the recent Swans records were recorded.
Nice.
And it's
definitely... Was that in Kingston?
This place wasn't in Kingston, but it was nearby. I can't remember which town it was in.
What's the name of this song?
This is called Rubber Rat.
Okay, can you spin that one, Joe? Please.
Holy shit, that sounds fantastic, Bob. That
really does sound
yeah. great. It's you know, it's so hard for me to get excited about rock music anymore. It's just like, you know, no, it's like the dumbest shit on earth. And after years of being pummeled by electric guitars and the big beat, it's you gotta have something that's something extra to really get my attention, and the Crump Cranks sound really, really fucking good.
Bob, what kind of young bands do you listen to? I mean, you're really involved in music.
The Beatles are no longer young, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, I really can't think of anything that's brand new and young that really floats my boat. Most things that
not
I
the
do,
Lady Gaga.
No, you know, I don't know. You know,
well, say you're going to go out on not a Saturday night, but like a Thursday night. What kind of show? Do you go to arena shows ever?
No, I've gone to millions of shows my whole life, starting when I was a teenager, and. Nowadays, it really takes an old favorite, like, you know, Red Cross or someone like that, to get me out of the house.
Right.
Or if friends of mine are playing down the block at Maxwell's, like Ian Savonis' Chain and the Gang, I saw pretty recently. And I can't think of anything that's real brand new, like all this, you know, crap coming out of Williamsburg doesn't do anything for me. Or,
well, don't worry, they're not going to be coming out of Williamsburg anymore because they can't afford to live there.
Well, that's the thing, though. The people who live there can not only afford to live there, but can afford to work on their art, and I say that in gigantic quotation marks, their art and their music, because they're rich. Because they have money. I mean, it's so hard. You know, when we were coming up, I'd sit in a bar in the Lower East Side. You never knew who you were sitting next to in some dive bar.
Right.
You know, it could be, you know, some, you know, out on his luck poet, or some, the next great film director, or some guy who had a novel in his pocket that was going to, like, break through and be huge, or a painter. Now, you know, it's like hedge fund douchebags. I was reading today in the New York Post on the way over here. That guy that wrote the book Why Quit Goldman Sachs
is kind of
in the news
like
right now.
Douche.
What a fucking tool, right? Seriously, yeah, he's complaining about his $500,000 bonus, you know? Poor little rich boy. But he was saying it was in the late 90s, he had to go to Alphabet City. Okay, right? Yeah. You know, and, you know, he roughed it because there was not near any subway. I mean, there's never been a subway in Avenue B, but, you know, I'm just laughing because we all know we haven't called it Alphabet City since when? Since, like, the mid-80s, you know? And now Avenue B might as well be Avenue fucking Bistro. You're better off buying a wicker chair there than a bag of dope. I mean, back when we were talking about it, I never, you know, Avenue A was sketchy enough. Avenue C was, like, verboten.
Oh, my God. Don't get me started, Deb. In the few minutes we have left, I want to go back to that point and... next week or the week after, on November 3rd, will be the 30th anniversary of my very first show with Sonic Youth.
Wow.
Which was also the night that I met my idol, Lydia Lunch. And ironically, 30 years later, on the same date, she's going to be in my house, and we're getting ready to do a week of shows with this retrovirus, doing a whole career-spanning thing of hers. And it's going to be awesome. I'm actually, right after this, in a few minutes, I'm going to be meeting Weasel Walter and Algis Kizzies from the Swans, and we're going back to my space in Hoboken to work it up. And for the people that are around here, we'll be playing at the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn on November 15th. And if you're even the tiniest bit of a Lydia Lunch fan, you wouldn't want to miss this show. We're covering all bases.
Looking forward to that.
I'm very excited about it, too. Now, look, Lydia Lunch, 30-year retrospective. I mean, can you imagine 30 years, you know, when she was doing Teenage Jesus or wherever it was at 30 years later? It's like, wow, it's still resonating, and she's great.
Yeah, and she's, you know, that was the great thing about her is she never stuck with one thing too long. So it's like a lot of styles of music, and it's all great. We're starting off with some Teenage Jesus songs, going into Eight Eyed Spy, 1313, Queen of Siam. We're doing it all. We're ending, I don't want to give away the set list too much, but ending with a classic Alice Cooper cover.
Have you ever played with her before?
Well, I recorded Death Valley 69 with her.
Right.
Yeah, and
which we're going to hear in a second.
A little bit things here and there. But I've never actually been in one of her bands or anything like that.
Well,
but we've been close friends for a long time.
Yeah, we had a great gig together opening up for her.
Exactly.
With the Bower Electric with Bob and Mickey Finn and my own thing.
Yeah.
My own traveling road show.
So
I still have the poster hanging over my computer that she signed with Bob Beats It So Good.
So where can... I mean, this is an international show since it's available on the internet. Where else are you guys playing besides the Knit? And how can people find info?
They can find info, I guess, on the internet. We're playing two shows in Los Angeles. One that has to do with the Fashion Institute, which is on November 8th. And then we're going up to San Francisco and playing there on the 10th at the Verdi Club. And then we're coming back to L.A. playing the Echo on Sunday the 11th. We're going from there to Toronto. Not sure what the date is, but then we're playing Hamilton, which is 45 minutes away from Toronto. And from there, we're coming right to the Knitting Factory. So it's like
it's a tour.
Six shows
it's
in like
tour.
7 days.
You guys have to hook up some of that European money.
Yeah,
big in Europe, right?
Yeah, like, we will. And we already talked about some future plans, but right now we got to rock this out. So.
I mean, I feel like there's so many things that we haven't even discussed, like BB Gunn, your writing, your
BB Gunn, one of the all-time great.
You know,
I don't call BB Gunn a fanzine.
It's nice to
so much better than that.
It's nice to think that my life expands beyond 20 minutes of a radio show.
At least you're like at least 47 minutes.
30 years to be here behind a pizzeria in Bushwick.
That's why I'm working on my book, which is going to be mostly photos. But I just wish I had the drive of these two excellent writers here. Because I hate writing.
Oh, just ask for help.
Yeah.
Seriously, you could do it.
Yeah.
You just need a deadline. You need someone to buy that off the proposal. And once you have a deadline where if you don't turn it in, you won't get paid, it's a big motivator.
Never forget, Bob, Mike and Judy are here for you.
All right.
Speaking of book authors, I want to give a shout out to our friend Lisa Carver today, whose new book is in the New York Times magazine today. This is just absolutely fantastic. Her new book, Reaching Out With No Hands, Reconsidering Yoko Ono, which is absolutely a fabulous book. And it was excerpted in today's New York Times magazine. A giant excerpt. Must be like 2,000 words. And it's a must read, and I hope it catapults her to the stardom that she so richly deserves.
I've been skipping the Sunday Times for the last few weeks. I'll have to pick it up today.
Yeah, definitely pick
up the
magazine.
You know what? Save the $5 that the Times costs you and buy her book.
Okay?
True. And we should also mention Judy's book as well, of course, the official book of Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Lists, which is available.
Starring a list by Bob Burt.
Exactly.
And Jisley, speaking of national. did the Jisley list make the book?
No, the Jisley book got me canceled by your ex-employer, but...
I knew that.
But I'm celebrating with Jizz in spirit. I'm fisting in my head. But
nice.
So we're going to go out with a Bob Burt extravaganza number. What is this, Bob?
The Sonic Youth.
Death Valley 69.
All right. Once again, it's been the Mike
with
and Judy
Lydia
Show
Lynch.
For Judy McGuire. I'm Mike Edison and Bob Burt here on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to Joe the Engineer. We'll see you guys next week.
All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.